How's it going, and welcome to episode 75 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Of course, follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by my co-host, Kevin Hasting, who should be followed on the Twitter himself at Hasting Kevin. And Kevin, it's just you and me today, man. We are going guestless once again. This late in the season, sometimes it's good to just kind of, bounce stuff off of each other, not have to worry about anybody else joining in. No, that's the more voices, usually the better. But I thought, let's start off September, just you and me. How's it going for you so far with only a month left?
It's going all right. It's really interesting watching league standings right now. It really depends on when your pitching is going and how they perform. The big swings, there's still pretty big swings in standings, like every 3 or 4 days, it seems. And did your pitchers perform well? Did you have your two or three aces pitch in those couple of days, and you jump up and you go a couple of days without any pitching, or God forbid, the blow up? Mm-hmm. And you drop right back down. So it's fun. This is why we do this.
Yeah. Then you make the mistake, though. Instead of just waiting 3 or 4 days to double check, you're watching the live standings and you're watching things get chipped away like minute by minute. Sometimes we were just looking at the listener league overalls right before we started recording, and we saw Lucas Berry jump over me in the overall standings as I was looking at it. So that was fun. Hopefully they jump back while we're recording this. We'll see. Lost on Saturday night.
I talked with Jeff Erickson about this earlier in the season. I watch live scoring, and I do it early in the year. And this is fun. Like I said, this is why we do this. And that's part of the fun, is paying attention to what's going on. Even though I know watching standings at that point doesn't really matter, it's still fun to watch. I have gotten to the point where even if I am watching a game live and my closer comes into the game, I switch to a different game. I'm not watching my closers.
Can't do it. No way. Yeah. The only live standings I watch regularly are my head-to-head leagues, and specifically my home dynasty league, especially now that playoffs start next week. I'm in the hunt in that league, so I'm watching that pretty regular, like while we're recording. It's over here on my right in my hand. So if you see my glance over this way, then I'm looking at the standings. If you look over this way, then I'm looking at our notes. So there's a little clue for you. Yeah. So those live standings, watching those live stats all the time. But my NFBC leagues, the 15 of those, no, I'm not looking at those on a regular basis. I'm usually just checking in them on the daily. Otherwise, I'd probably go nuts. Go
ahead. Another thing about this is fun, and we're watching baseball, and that's what's baseball fans. Even though this isn't broadcast until after the game is over, because I am absolutely not a White Sox fan, is it okay to bring up the fact that Dylan Cease hasn't given up a hit through 8 at this point? Is that a jinx, or the fact that
does he have a strikeout though? I was watching that.
He had 2 earlier.
he's not going to get the how am I supposed?
Five strikeouts through 8.
I've got Cease and Ray on the same team, Robbie Ray, and at one point they had combined for 8 innings in 1 strikeout, and I'm like, that what kind of bizarro world are we living in right now?
Yeah, but Cease is definitely going to get to go back out there in the 9th. By the time this airs, we'll know what happened. But he's only at 91 pitches through 8, so they're definitely going to give him a shot at this.
He probably won't get the Maddux, but he will definitely get the shot. And we can break that quote live, and then I will try to put this out as soon as humanly possible. All right, let's get through it then. Let's get through it. You keep an eye on that, and I'll start scrolling through these news and notes, and maybe we can add a news item in at the very end talking about that. It probably won't affect Fab, but it's fun to talk about for sure, because I have plenty of exposure to Cease across my league, so I'm not upset about this. Let's go into something a little bit more negative to start, and maybe hopefully we can end on a positive note. And that is the news that Zach Wheeler, Kevin, will not be returning to the Phillies on Tuesday, which is what he was saying he was expecting, he was targeting, and then everybody else pretty much planning on that. Instead, the Phillies are going to hold off on letting him throw altogether until sometime next week, which would lead one to speculate that he may not return at all until maybe the following week at the earliest. Though Jason Martinez over at Roster Resource has him penciled in as the Thursday starter on his roster grid. Maybe he knows something we don't, or he's heard something else that hasn't come up yet. But with that news, what impact does that news have on your FAB considerations for this Sunday? Are you cutting Wheeler? Are you holding, picking up any other Philadelphia pitchers, considering that he's at least going to miss another turn in the rotation? What's your plan here?
It makes it tough not knowing. Definitely not cutting Wheeler, at least till we see what happens this coming week. As you said, I saw that he's going to throw a bullpen sometime this coming week. So we have to wait and see what happens there, because I don't believe he will be pitching Thursday or even this coming week. If we don't even know which day he's going to throw a bullpen yet, and then they're going to want to evaluate him afterwards. So I'm not counting on him for this week. If I have him rostered, I'm not starting him this week unless we hear something definite before we have to get our lineup set on Monday. But it really does make things difficult when you're speculating on the rest of the rotation, which I am, because pitching for this coming week, if you're looking to add somebody, it's not pretty. If you're looking for a starting pitcher for this week. But like I said, people probably already know who I'm talking about, but it's going to come up again later in the show.
All right, we'll get there. Nice tease. Yeah, it's tough, man. We'll get to another question later, but like somebody gets hurt right now or continues to be hurt when you thought he were going to get him back earlier, it makes it really difficult not just to be like, listen, I'm scrimping and scraving. Whatever I need to do to inch my way up the standings, whatever category, this guy's dead weight, even for one more week, even a guy like Wheeler, because whether or not when he comes back, I'm still in the assumption he will come back, even from one or two starts, as the Phillies are fighting for that playoff spot. And he will come back. And even if they are in a position where they're going to clinch a playoff spot early, one of those wildcard spots, they're going to want him to be warmed up and ramped up for the playoffs. So they're going to want him
on schedule and all that good stuff.
But is that first start back going to be, as Nick Pollock calls it, a still ill, like where you're not going to want to put him out there for the very first start back because he's got an elbow issue? I think he was put on originally. It was something about his forearm. I was scrolling back to try to find it, couldn't find it, but it seems weird that it seems like it's all over the place and there hasn't been a ton of communication as to what exactly is wrong. It seems more precautionary, and now all of a sudden he's out for another week at least. I'm with you. I'm holding on to him for another week, but my trigger finger is going to be a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker to next Sunday if we don't get any positive news from that bullpen.
Right.
All right, we got a return to the rotation, this time with the Mets. They got Carlos Carrasco back, and that speculates the end of David Peterson's run as the fill-in starter in New York. The upcoming schedule for the Mets is pretty favorable, so are you still holding Peterson for those who picked him up while they were speculating on him entering the rotation, which obviously he did with that doubleheader, and then he pitched a couple more times? Are you holding on to him with the hope he makes his way back into the rotation, whether they go six man or he fills in for another injury, Carrasco gets hurt again or somebody else? Do you have any plans for Peterson or recommendations?
Yeah, I'm holding on to him and may even start him in a spot or two. I need to dig a little deeper, make sure that he's going to remain with the team. I believe thus far he has. They have sent him down at other points this season, but minor league baseball seasons have ended. We talk about our ratio guys later in the show. I think he fits in. I think he's going to be used. And every time this season that he's lost his rotation spot, he's gotten it back immediately. I'm not hoping for anything bad to happen to any of the other guys in the Mets staff, but I'm holding on to Peterson. I think he can be useful even without getting back in the rotation. And as the season winds down, even if everybody remains healthy, he could get a spot start or two. So I'm definitely holding him.
Man, that schedule, man, the Mets schedule for the rest of the year, just these matchups at Pittsburgh, at Miami, hosting the Cubs, hosting the Pirates. They're at Milwaukee for three, but then they're at Oakland for three. They host Miami for two. Then they go to Atlanta for three, and they end the season with three with hosting the Nationals. So maybe there's two series in there that you're like, I'd rather not, but man, it's too tempting. Even if he gets just that spot start in there, like just to give somebody, give Scherzer, give DeGrom a rest, stretch those guys out a little bit more, but keeping, obviously you're not going to skip them in the rotation altogether, but Carrasco just came back. Walker was having issues. It would make a whole lot of sense for the Mets to give Peterson a spot start here or there.
And so, that last half week of the season for Roto Leagues, where we play through Wednesday, the final week of the season, teams are going to have, unless it's a game they have to win to get into the postseason.
Oh,
they're going to have their pitching lined up to start the postseason game. A guy like Peterson's probably going to get a start on that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the final week of the season.
Good point. Yeah, and then so, yeah, and plus getting them against Washington, great. And then you let Scherzer and DeGrom face Atlanta the series before so that they're in line for those games one and two of the series, whatever series the Mets end up with. All right, let's go back to an IL placement. The Giants, they place Alex Wood on the IL. And this leads me to my question I said earlier. Have we officially entered the portion of the season where if any pitcher hits the 15-day IL as of today, should we be considering them droppable, knowing that they're going to be out for at least the next two out of the next 5 weeks? And on a very specific note, is there anybody in San Francisco that's going to be filling in that rotation spot with Wood's absence that you're taking a look at?
Yeah, I don't know who I like in San Francisco to take his spot. And the Giants are behind Arizona now in the division standings.
What a difference a year makes.
Yeah. So they're almost out of it. They're not officially out of it yet, but they're really close. They're 10 games out of a wild card spot with roughly 30 games to play. They're probably out of it. So not a lot of interest here. And for that reason as well, I think it's a case by case basis. And this is the type of player in Alex Wood that would be on the bubble of whether I would consider dropping him or not at this point. I think the fact that the Giants are pretty much out of the postseason race makes it an easy drop for me. Players a little better than Alex Wood and in a playoff hunt, completely different story. We just talked about Zach Wheeler. I'm holding him at least this week. And granted, he's not on the 15-day IL. Even if he was, it would still be tough to cut him loose if you think he's going to come back for two or three starts to get ramped up for the postseason. So it's a case-by-case basis. Specifically in this case, yeah, I have Alex Wood in a lot of spots. And mostly it's draft champions leagues. But in the ones where it's not, in the fab leagues, he's probably on my drop list this week.
Yeah, I believe Gabe Kapler said that he's not convinced that Wood will pitch again this season as well. So keep an eye out for more official statements on that one before you make your drops on Sunday. But I'm leaning toward Wood's probably going to the wayside for me. I actually don't know that I have any exposure. I'm sure I have one or two here or there, but if in places where I can drop him, he's going to be a consideration. All right, a couple more IL spots here, Kevin. The Guardians, they placed Aaron Civale and Zach Plesac on the IL. Without getting too much into detail on this utter stupidity of one of those injuries, are there any fill-ins in Cleveland, especially with rosters expanding, that should be considered, especially with Cleveland, not like San Francisco, leading the division and trying to hold on to that playoff berth?
I don't think so. It appears this is tough. It really looks like they're using Xavion Curry and Cody Morris in these couple of spots the rest of the way. Curry started today, wasn't horrible, but wasn't good. He gives up a lot of fly balls and doesn't strike anybody out. That just does not appeal to me. And Cody Morris isn't really stretched out. I don't have interest in either one of these guys. It's really interesting because Cleveland's leading the division and they're head into the postseason most likely, and it's really going to be interesting to see what happens if they don't get these guys back. Of course, they got Bieber and Quantrill and McKenzie, as their three, but you would think they need another starter. This is totally off the subject and doesn't have anything to do with our fab, really. But I guess it could, because he's very useful. Once again, as one of those ratio guys we talk about later in the show, and he's not the one we're talking about. But how good Karinchak has been when he was so bad when sticky stuff went away last season. And there's been a couple articles written about there has to be something back that these guys are using again that's not getting caught when they get checked after every inning, because he has been so good for the past 2 or 3 months. It's just insane.
It's uncanny.
That's completely off. It's completely off the subject for what we're talking about, other than you could use him as if you need a reliever to and hopefully vulture a win here or there. But as far as the starters go, but as far as the starters go, I really don't have interest here.
All right. Yeah, there's been a couple of pieces of the Cleveland bullpen that have been pleasant surprises. Obviously, Class A topping them with all being the solid closer there. But between Stevens and now Karinchak, some names to consider down the stretch for sure, especially if they do clinch up that central division, you might see a little bit more usage out of the bullpen, especially with all these starters going down. All right, let's get right into September 1st call-ups, because that was the bulk of the transactions. We're not going to get into all of them, obviously. They're not all going to be useful to us. So there's one that came up that wasn't a debut. So we had a couple of debuts. We'll get to those in a little bit. But one of them, big name, not a debut, is Detroit's Spencer Torkelson. He returns to the club after being sent down earlier in the year to work on some stuff in AAA. It seems as though he might have. He's doing better things in AAA. My question, though, is will that translate to fantasy relevance for the final month of the major league season, Kevin? And are you putting any stock into just the name recognition of Torkelson and in the pedigree to help you down the stretch?
Not for the rest of this season. And he could perform well. He was at one of the best college bats we've seen in a long time. And I think he is going to be a great MLB hitter. And it could happen towards the end of this season. But the Detroit lineup is so bad. The counting stats just aren't there. And he's not hitting home runs. Even in the minor league, he's got 10 all year in over 450 plate appearances combined, AAA and MLB, five in each spot. So the strikeout rate it's not awful, but it's still not great either. At the MLB level, he hasn't walked nearly as much as he has in the minors, although it's a 9.6% walk rate at the MLB level. It is nice, especially for a guy that has the potential to hit like he can. I just think the lineup is so bad that unless you really think he's going to go on a home run binge, that's the only use he would have, because he's not going to give you anything else.
Yeah, and since coming back, they've only been putting him in the 7 hole as well. It's not as though they're throwing him right back into like cleanup or the top half of the order. So if you're in the bottom half of the Detroit Tigers lineup, I don't care how good you are. It's not doing much for you at this point until they turn things around. All right. It's appropriate that it comes up while we're talking about call-ups. Got some new breaking news, if you will. At least I just noticed it. By the time you guys are all listening to this, you've all seen it. But Tristan Casas has been reported to be joining the Red Sox on Sunday, unfortunately. Fortunately, because now we get a whole week to see how he's going to be used, and you don't have to decide whether or not you want to bid on Tristan Casas over Gunnar Henderson or Corbin Carroll, who we'll talk about next, at least on the offensive side. So are you... The question, I guess, here is, if you are interested in Torkelson, you're not that interested in Torkelson, but you need first base help. Are you bidding a low number on Torkelson or another first base, knowing that you've got Casas next week that you could save your money for? Or is this situation in Boston, even with Eric Hosmer apparently not progressing and not coming back anytime soon? Cora said that he was going to be playing Christian Arroyo at first base on a regular basis, with Bobby Dalbec filling in every once in a while, and Frankie Cordero. So that's the situation in Boston at first base. And so it seems, though, you want Casas. He's well beyond the time
where he is going to hit any kind of rookie wall. He's going to keep his rookie status for next year. He could, at this point, he could probably play every single day, get three at bats, and still get rookie eligibility for 2023. So I don't think that's a concern. Do you see the Red Sox doing that? Like playing him every single day? Like why call him up if they're not going to play him every single day? Or are there too many mouths to feed in at first base in Boston?
Unfortunately for you as a Red Sox fan, they're completely out of it. So they're only doing this to get him more at bats. So a season doesn't come to an end, right? Sure. We mentioned earlier, minor league seasons are over.
Hey, he missed a good chunk of it earlier. Yeah, with injuries.
Right. He's only had a little over 300 plate appearances all season. And he was in the Arizona Fall League last year. So I believe that rule is still in place. He can't go again. You're only allowed to go once. I believe that's still a rule. So this, yeah, they want him to play every day. And we know what he can do with the power. The big question will be, let's see what happens with his strikeouts at the major league level, because it's right at that spot, especially at AAA this season. And like I said, a little over 300 plate appearances at 21.5%. If he can maintain that or not go up much at the major league level, sure, then he's definitely somebody that we can use with the power that he has. But that's that, in that spot where it could really go the wrong way in quite a few percentage points. So that will be the determining factor. Not knowing that, yeah, I think he's someone you add. First base is not a spot where there's a lot of people available. Unfortunately, there are 15 team leagues. It hurt when Eric Hosmer went down for some some teams. That's what we're talking about at first base. So yeah, absolutely. I think he's somebody we're going to be interested in. And yeah, when I saw him in the Arizona Fall League last year, and he's a lot bigger in person than I had realized that he was, but not Dan Vogelbach big. Like, he's Aaron Judge big. And so that's like who he reminded me of when I saw him walking through the outfield the first time I saw him. I was like, whoa, I didn't realize this is what he looked like. So yeah, I'm interested. I've seen him in person and he performed pretty well there last season. And the results haven't been there in the win column for Boston. That's still a lineup that can put up some numbers. So the counting stats could be there for him as well in the runs and RBI categories as well.
Yeah, I venture to guess that Boston's going to put him right into Christian Arroyo's seventh spot in the lineup with Story back from the IL and JD Martinez actually remembering how to hit, and Devers obviously hitting the ball again as well. There's nowhere for him to carve a spot in the top half of the lineup. But at the same time, I can't imagine he's going to bat below Reese McGuire and Arroyo himself if he were to move into a different spot. Maybe Hernandez moves up, Enrique Hernandez, he moves up, and then one of the days that he's in the lineup. So I like the fact that we get to see him for ultimately 8 days in that lineup to see how they're going to use him, how many games he's going to play, is he going to sit against lefties, yada, yada, all that. And so you get a better sense of what to expect for the final like 3 weeks of the year.
Also, this is a guy you should double check, even in NFBC formats. Check and see if he's available in your league. He's rostered in 4% of main event leagues. I would venture to guess that he was drafted in more than that 4%, because that's a long time to hold on to him. Or more likely, he's been picked up in recent weeks as a spec ad.
Exactly.
Hoping he gets called up. But he might not have been snatched up everywhere he was drafted. So it's worth taking a look.
Excellent point. All right, let's go to the big guys, as we alluded to earlier. I didn't allude, I just said it. We're going to talk about Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson. So two, if not the two, top prospects in baseball. They were called up this past week for their respective clubs. Diamondbacks bringing up Carroll to play the outfield, and the playoff-fighting Orioles calling up utility man Gunnar Henderson. Yes, I'm calling him a utility man because he has already played second, third, and shortstop since being called up just a few days ago. That is going to make it a little bit more difficult for him to gain extra position eligibility, at least in the NFBC and other platforms. Because if he's jumping around to different positions, he hasn't played first base yet, but he did play first base in the minors leading up to his call up. It's going to be difficult for him to get those 10 games at any one of those positions. So there's very is a strong possibility he just has shortstop eligibility through the rest of the season. So we've talked about these guys in the last couple episodes of speculation of that they're going to be called up. After then there was an announcement that they were going to be called up, and then they were. Here they are. So now that we've had a chance to see how the Orioles and the Diamondbacks are utilizing these guys and how they've been performing in their short time in the major leagues, which one are you more apt to go out and get this Sunday? Again, I'm sure it depends on your team, what categories you're going after, yada, but which one looks like it's going to be more bang for your buck this Sunday night?
I think it's Henderson. I think he gets slightly more playing time. We've already seen it with Corbin Carroll, and Arizona fans on Twitter were in an uproar that he sat his third game. But this is what's going to happen as long as Ketel Marte is still taking up the DH spot. They have five outfielders. And yes, Corbin Carroll probably deserves to play more than any of the other four, but he's still going to sit once in a while. With the moving around that Henderson does and Baltimore being in the postseason race, I think he's going to get a little more playing time than Carroll, and that's the kicker. Of course, I'm putting bids in on both of them and a lot of supplemental reserve players in our bids this week. We'll talk a little more about that later as well. We're getting to that point, but that's the tiebreaker is playing time. Love to have either one of them, of course.
Yeah, be bidding on both of them as well. You got to remember, I think we talked about this with the Welsh last week, but they're going to both sit. Yes, I agree. I think Henderson's going to get more playing time, but both teams need and want the rookie eligibility for 2023 so they can go gung-ho all year and get that, or at least place in the rookie of the year voting. They're going to sit unless both of them have a 20% walk rate. To chip, because it is based on at bats. They both came up late enough where they're not going to be on the roster long enough. Well, I think it's like 42, 44 games or something like that. They're not going to hit that mark, but they might hit the, was it 130 or 140 at bats that they hit need. It's not plate appearances at bats. So if they walk plenty, then sure, maybe they don't sit. Hit a couple of sack flies in there as well. And something that doesn't count as an at bat, and they'll be fine. I think the Orioles and the Diamondbacks are going to play it a little bit carefully. It looks like that obviously the Diamondbacks are already doing that with Carroll. Henderson is going to sit here or there. So just something to keep in mind. He might play every day. They are trying to get that playoff spot, but don't be terribly surprised if all of a sudden they decide, hey, this is a maintenance day or this is a regular day off, or they're going to sit him against this lefty or what have you. It's going to happen. And unfortunately, you can't just bid on Gunnar Henderson's hair all by itself. You have to bid on the entire person, because obviously if you have triple digits left in your fab, that's where it's going. It's just going for the flow.
Yep, definitely.
The man does not like wearing a helmet. All right, a couple other additions to their September rosters. The Astros and the Orioles again. Orioles just trying to call up all their best prospects this year between Adley and Gunnar Henderson and now D.L. Hall. He joins the bullpen in Baltimore. The Astros called up Hunter Brown, who initially was thought to be joining their bullpen as well. But now it's been announced that he's going to be starting for the Astros on Monday. Now, how long he goes into that game as a pure starter is we'll find out on Monday for sure. But he is on the roster. He's going to make his debut on Monday. Which are, do you see either one of these guys putting up enough innings to warrant weekly plays from here on out rather than streaming a questionable starter? As you mentioned, they don't really exist all that much.
Yeah, I think so. Especially if the strikeouts translate for either one, right? I think they're in the conversation for the ratio guys. And fortunately, there's a lot of them. And we talk about this a lot. There may be one or two you like better based on number of games being played and matchups for a week. But this is, if you have nobody you trust to use as a sixth or seventh starting pitcher in a rotation, you can literally put 30 of these guys on your bid list for a dollar and take the one exactly. You want. And I think both of these guys fit. 134 strikeouts for Brown in 106 innings. We've seen DL Hall, and he went back to the minors, and he's coming back in a relief role. This isn't, I don't think, to get him work. This is Baltimore in a position to make a postseason that nobody thought they could. And they believe that him helping them out of the bullpen gives them the best chance to win and make the postseason. So I think they have that confidence in these guys. Same with Houston, with the injuries they have with Verlander right now and a couple of their starters not performing as well as they would hope, that he's going to be used to help them win games, not just to get in some extra work for this past month.
Yeah, I agree. I like to see Hall get in those multi-inning relief appearances as well, to see, not to keep him stretched. If they make the playoffs, he's still not making the rotation, the playoff rotation. Their starting rotation has been a very pleasant surprise, especially for us who have been streaming them for the last couple weeks, if not months, between Dean Kramer and Kyle Bradish and others. But since he obviously has been starting and has been stretched out, to see him go two and a third, three innings, if absolutely needed, wouldn't be a huge shock. And depending on his usage early on, you want to be bidding on him, knowing if he pitches on Sunday, we might not see him for a couple days. But if he doesn't, if he pitches, doesn't pitch throughout the weekend, you almost treat him and other guys like him like a two-star pitcher. These relievers that we're talking about, they don't pitch all weekend, knowing that they could come into the game on Monday and pitch three times throughout the week instead of twice, or even four times if they don't go too long in one of those appearances. You want to be looking at, so something I look at when I am streaming in these relievers, and at least when I'm putting in the hierarchy of my bids for these $1 bids that you just mentioned, that I couldn't agree with more as a strategy for Fab, especially this time of year. But if the guys that they all are pretty much equal, then you want the guys who are going to put up the most innings and they're going to make the biggest dent. So the guys that didn't pitch over the weekend, who have a better shot of coming in on Monday or Tuesday, and then again on Thursday, and then again on Saturday, maybe they go back to back on one of those days as well, and they get a fourth day in there. They have more of an opportunity to make a difference for you, especially in those weekly formats where you can't switch out your pitchers throughout the course of the week.
Yeah, exactly. And I was looking at this earlier today, and it's amazing to look at what Baltimore has done and then just read the names of their starting pitching rotation. Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. So a couple of weeks ago, we were talking with Todd Zola about some things, and he brought up Julio Urias in the past for the Dodgers, was a guy that he would be used for multiple innings in the postseason. And I can foresee a scenario where that's what Baltimore wants DL Hall to be able to do. Usually that's a couple of your starters that aren't going to need to start games in the postseason, but so you can use them in those roles instead. But when you look at Baltimore's rotation, would you choose your fourth and fifth starter? Or do you think, oh, DL Hall is stretched out, he's been starting in the minors, even though he got roughed up, he went over three innings in his one MLB start that he had back in mid-August. And so we know he can throw multiple innings. And so for this next month, they need to see if he's going to be able to perform at the level they need him to be in that role. So it's very likely, in my opinion, that he's going to get those multiple inning appearances that you're hoping for.
Austin Voth, Kyle Bradish. Come on.
Yeah, I tweeted earlier in the week when I was setting my lineups that I just put Austin Voth in a spot for Justin Verlander, which sounds absolutely horrible. Now, Voth, with the matchup that he has this weekend, is somebody that almost in every league, somebody was using him. But the fact that I was putting him in for Justin Verlander was just...
mind-boggling.
Yeah, this is fun.
This is why we play. All right, let's get away from the September call-ups. We've got two more notes here. Really quickly, something that just came through, obviously with his start today, returning from the IL, Tyler Molly only went two innings. He was pulled from his start with right shoulder inflammation. I can't imagine that's good, for one. he was down, I think, 2 miles per hour on most pitches, if not just his fastball. Are you giving up? Is it time to just give up on Molly, even without knowing if he's going to go back on the IL?
I think so, unless we get really good news before we have to have this done on Sunday evening. for most leagues. Mm-hmm. The only thing is that would give me hesitation is Minnesota is still in the hunt. They're only a game and a half back from the division behind Cleveland. So that's the only thing. They could really use Mahle if he's healthy. But yeah, when you're making your return and two innings and it's, you're down in velocity, it's, if they're saying inflammation, it hurts. If they're already know that's inflammation, they haven't had time to have him checked out. It doesn't feel good. I can't agree. You said it perfectly. It can't be good. Yeah, I think so. Unless we get some mind-boggling, encouraging news before Sunday evening, which I highly doubt.
Yeah, it's different than where my mind went with Andrew Heaney. He got scratched from his start on Sunday, but there's no reason. There's nothing. Like, it wasn't even after his start. It was like a couple days after his start. And what's going on? And then everything just clicked with everybody. Oh, that's right. The Dodgers are going to a six-man rotation. And then all of a sudden an announcement came out saying that he's going to start on Monday.
Right.
Collective sigh. Thank you very much. This is not that. This is something very tangible that we all saw happening if you were watching the game. And they've already made an announcement of why they pulled him. So you do what you want with Tyler Mahle. If I've got him anywhere, I'm probably dropping him for somebody that's going to actually be useful over the next couple of weeks. All right.
In a lot of cases, he might be my last drop.
But sure.
At this point in the year, all of my drops are getting dropped. Yeah. So.
If NFBC allowed me, I would go with one or two short in my roster at this point. Yeah. Just because it's like, all right, that's fine. All right, last note here. Andrew Benintendi, he was placed on the IL for the Yankees with right wrist inflammation. Of course, he's a hitter, so that's only a 10-day. So we'll see if he lasts a little bit longer than that or if he just goes the minimum. But at least he's going to be out for the next week. Benintendi, of course, he's been the everyday left fielder and hitting toward, if not at the top of the lineup for the Yankees ever since coming over from your Royals. So who fills that side of the outfield for at least the next 10 days? And is it going to be somebody that's going to assist the Yankees in remembering how to win games?
I think you put this in here just so we could enjoy the implosion of the New York Yankees together.
I didn't know such thing.
Their lead is down to 4 games. How crazy is that?
The best thing I saw was the Freezing Cold Takes tweet or whatever that went out yesterday. It was like, MLB put out a graphic that's they're on pace at the beginning of August. It's like they're on pace. The Yankees are on pace for 120 wins or 180 wins or something. It was something crazy. 20 wins, I think it was. And obviously that did not work out.
And they followed it up with the worst record in baseball for an entire month. It's awesome. It's amazing. I think to the disappointment of Yankee fans, this solidifies Aaron Hicks' position in the lineup. And I enjoy this so much. I enjoy
until he runs into the wall, Twitter is watching
Yankee fans just complain about this lineup on a day in and day out basis. But he's going to move over to left for the most part. I think Aaron Judge, center field. And then we got Oswaldo Cabrera, who we talked about a couple weeks ago. This probably solidifies his playing time in right field. It has for the past couple of games since Benintendi went down. That's probably what we're looking at. He hasn't done much yet. I wasn't really interested in him in the first place. I'm still not. I'm just enjoying the implosion and watching this lead sink. They were upset that it was only 6 games, and that was a day and a half ago, and now it's 4. It's 4. Amazing.
I don't know. The decisions that are happening there, of course, it was funny. Oswald Peraza, one of their September call-ups, got the start today at shortstop, and obviously Yankees fans are all clamoring for him to play every day and sit IKF and sit Torres, whatever. The Yankees put out a tweet saying, MLB debut coming up, start this game. And then somebody commented saying, no, that happened yesterday in the 9th inning as a pinch hitter in a 9-0 ball game. Don't you remember? Right. And then the Yankees deleted their tweet because they forgot that they played this guy already. Unfortunately, that that may be continuing to be the case for Peraza, one of their top prospects in their organization throughout the course of the year. Maybe they make right and he plays every day there, but I wouldn't be prioritizing him over any of the other call-ups based on that alone and what we should be expecting from him moving forward. All right, that is going to wrap it up for our news and notes section of this episode. As always, we missed a whole bunch of stuff. Let's to keep up with all the news of the day, make sure you're listening to the First Pitch podcast with Chad Young, Scott Chu, and Daniel Port. They break down all the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. Just a moment. We are going to break down or update a little bit our On the Wire listener leagues as we get closer and closer to the end of the ceiling, and we are closer and closer to crowning our first ever champion of our 60-team league. Before we do that, we are going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we're back. Of course, you're listening with On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined by Kevin Hastings. And Kevin, let's take a moment. Usually this section of the pod, we talk a little bit about strategy, or we focus on the expertise of our guest, and we talk about some stuff that might be able to help a little bit more granular than talking about specific players. Right now, I just want to give some shout-outs. It's been a long season. It's not over. But we've had officially 60 teams in our On the Wire Listener League. And we got to come up with a better name for this next year, by the way, not just Listener League, something more fun. So we'll be taking suggestions all off season, by the way. But for now, they're just the Listener Leagues. And we have a couple teams in there that took more than one roster, you yourself and myself included. So there's roughly 60, maybe a little bit less individuals in here. But overall, and we talked about earlier, I was looking at the overall standings before we recorded. They have moved. Aha, I jumped back over Lucas Berry since I made that comment. I'm gonna go ahead and give everybody the top 10. And it's only so that I can pat myself on the back because I'm listed on there twice. We have listener Dennis Timko, followed by Kevin Hastings in the number 2 slot. You guys are in the same league for that one as well, and you're only about 22 points apart in the overall, which 22 points, yeah, that sounds like a lot, but in the overall standings, that can definitely change, especially with only 60 teams in the overall contest. In third, at the moment of me recording this, again, any of this can change while I'm recording this because there are games happening. Steven Gasuelli, our friend and of the pod, of course, over at Wins Above Fantasy on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I am in my third. It took me 3 drafts, apparently, to get to this spot. So in fourth overall is my third team from the 5th league. Todd Zola, which is on the show the other day, he is in 5th. Lucas Beery, I keep mentioning, is currently in 6th. I'm sure by the time I'm done reading these off, he'll be in 4th. Over me. George Montañez is in 7th. Greg Jewett is in 8th. My second team in the 3rd league is in 9th. And then Eric Davis rounding out the top 10 here with 398.5 points. That's less than 100 points below the first overall in there. So shout out to everybody in that top 10 and for those honorable mentions in there who are trying to jump in there, including Ian C. Eaton, who is in 13th, John Fish in 15th, and a whole bunch of other guys. We'll keep an eye on that. We still have a couple weeks left there. How, Kevin, talk to me about how you have a league where you're leading, obviously.
Not anymore.
Oh, shoot. I was going to say, obviously, you're second overall. You must be leading that league. But unfortunately, if I'm not mistaken, the person now beating you in your league is the one also in first overall.
Yeah, that's Dennis Timko. Excuse me. Shout out to him. Yeah, we've been going back and forth here most of the season. It's been really tight the entire way. We have a pretty comfortable lead over the third place team, but this was gonna come down to the last half week of the season, most definitely, as we both keep going back and forth. You said I was leading this league. That was when we were talking less than an hour ago, right before we started recording, and now he has a point and a half lead. That's the way it's been all season long in this league. That's been a lot of fun. So yeah, shout out to Dennis, and hopefully he ends up in second in the league and overall.
Just because we're hosting it doesn't mean we don't want to win, guys. I'm just gonna throw that
exactly by the way, unlike you have two top 10 overall teams. I am in three of these leagues, and both of my other two, I am in 10th place in 12 team leagues. It just hasn't come together for me in those two leagues. I have one to really concentrate on down the last month of the season, while you have two of them.
I don't know if this is luckily for me or not, but like these two that I'm doing well in are two of my fab leagues, and they are the ones that I have the best shot in cashing in of most of my leagues. So I have to spend, I wish I was doing better in my DCs. Obviously the payout is better and all that, but I'm putting more effort into my fab leagues because I'm doing well in them. And so more effort, more stress. That's exactly what we all need at this time of year. Yeah. In one of the leagues I'm leading, it's me, same situation. Lucas Bieri and myself have going back and forth in the first and second place. Alexander Chase and Eric Davis are right behind us as well. But that'll be the one that I know is going to happen. Is I'll lead all week in the final week, and then Lucas will do something and jump me. I'll look on, was it a Wednesday? I'll look on Wednesday night and like, all right. Looking to count all the things that I've won, and I'm down a peg. So we'll see how that one ends. I got John Fish right behind me in League 3 as well. That one's a little not as close as the beer. We haven't been going back and forth. We're only 3 points behind, 3 points apart, but we've got a decent lead over Shelley for straight in third place. Almost 10 points behind me at first place as well. So that's that one. And then League 1, that's the one. Steve Griswelli is leading us. Him and Jorge Montanez are going back and forth on that one. They're 1.5 points apart from each other, with Greg Jewett right behind them as well, about 4 points back. So what's the other league that you're in that you are not leading?
That's the one that we talked about with Todd Zola a couple of weeks ago. He's mm-hmm. leading, fairly comfortable league, and he talked about starting to concentrate on the overall a little bit because of his comfortable league, but his lead has shrunk to 8 points. He may back off of that a little bit depending on how he looks in categories over the next couple of weeks, I would expect, because I'm sure if he hasn't looked at it so far this week, when he goes to start doing his fab for the upcoming week and notices, my lead's down to 8 points in the league, maybe I need to take a second look here. And that's a good thing to bring up. That's something to keep in mind as you're checking things out. But still a fairly comfortable lead with only 4.5 weeks to go. Eric Samulski in second place in that league, and David Odom in third. They are the two other teams with over 80 points, 80.5 and 85.5, as not too bad a point accumulation for a 12-team league there.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to just mention, we talked about this before we started recording, I think it's interesting to see where Fab lands, or at least our budgets land, especially in these 12 teamers. And I know a lot of people who play a lot of 15 teamers have a hard time balancing their 12 team budgets because it's just bidding in the 12 teamers is so different than in the 15 teamers, especially in the more versus less competitive leagues. In League One, Cesar Spelli, leading that league, has $0 left. So he is running with what he's got the rest of the way and crossing his fingers. But it's good to see that right behind him, George only has $3 left and Greg Jewett only has $15 left. Now, I want to just compare that to League Three, one of the leagues that I am leading. In third place, Shelly, she has $35. John Fish has $133 left. So that's, he's in a decent spot, especially if he's just going to carve out $20, $25 each week throughout the course of the rest of the season. But I still have $605 left.
Whoa.
I've had budget. So I'm going to be overspending a whole lot, fair warning to everybody out in that league, over the course of the rest of the season. So if you see some guys who should have gone for a dollar go for $45, it's because you can't take it with you guys. I got to spend it somehow. I'm getting everybody I want this week. I'm just going to say that. Same can be said about in League Five. I have $505 there, but Alexander Chase still has $822. He's sitting in third place. So if he wanted to, he could. That's not quite the hammer. That's the thing, is like a lot of these leagues, you'll see in this league alone, there are three teams with over $950 left. In the first, in League Three, there is a team with $1,000 left in their budget. In League One, there is one team with $997 left in their budget. And these are all teams at the bottom three of the league. So these will happen, and especially in 12 teamers, where teams check out at some point in the season. And that's a whole, maybe we talk about that next week, and like the etiquette there is of climbing back in when you are plainly out. And obviously it works differently in a head-to-head league than it does in a roto league, or a league that cashes and a league that doesn't cash. So I think that's a whole nother section of a podcast, so we don't need to get into it. But what's the Fab situation in those two other leagues that you're in?
I'm in a tough spot in the league where I'm battling to hopefully come out on top. I have $2 left.
There it is.
I have $2 and I have Alex Wood in that league, probably spending a dollar on a list of 45 pitchers this week right. to make sure I get one of them. And Dennis has $191, which is mid pack. But like you said, some of those up above him probably have checked out at this point. So he's in a really good spot, having $191 left in Fab and battling for the overall championship here. Yeah, that's the least amount of money I have in any of my NFBC leagues. I am out of money in one other league, but that is a league that does have $0 bids, so I can replace injured players. This is by far the worst shape I'm in any league as far as Fab is concerned.
This happened in most of my 12 teamers last year as well for me, where I found myself with just, oh, that's right, I have way too much money. I don't know what to do with myself here. I found myself bidding like $120 in the final week of Fab on somebody. Again, can't take it with
this
me.
This is
that's
the
fine.
League. So this is the league. I don't think I brought it up on the show. I tweeted about it the night. Dustin May weekend. Every one of my leagues except one, he went for triple digits. And that one was close to triple digits. And the backup bids were close in all of those leagues. I got him for $101. This is 2 weeks ago. And so that's why I'm out of money. But the runner-up bid was $3.
Oof. Yeah. That's how it works, man. That's how it works. That's the stress of Fab, especially in a 12-teamer. All right, let's talk about some of those Fab options, some of those players that I will be getting in all of these leagues. if I need him, if I need him. That's the other thing. If you're listening to this and you're in one of these leagues with me, you really need to be checking my roster to see what I need in these situations. Like, if I don't need stolen bases, I'm probably not spending all my money on Corbin Carroll. That's probably not the direction I'm going to go in. And so that doesn't go from just me. That goes for all of your competitors. Know where you might need to up your bid based on those above you and around you in the standings that might be going after a similar type of player, or those who are above you that they don't care. They might throw a keep your honest bid on there just because. But at this point, you don't even do keep your honest bids. Like, at this point of the season, you're only worried about what's going to help you and you alone, unless you're in such a good shape that you can play defense and you can try to keep players away from other teams. More than likely, you're focusing on the categories that are going to help you. So just that little tidbit in there to remind you of all the things that you need to be looking for if you're doing FAB correctly, or at least to the fullest extent. Let's talk about some of those players, though, in some of those categories, Kevin. I'm going to skim through some of mine, and I'd love to get your take on them, whether or not these are guys that are worth going after. But they're names that stuck out based on the fact that, so again, we're going to start with our power category. So the guys I'm going to mention, they are both playing in Colorado for half the week, with one of them playing, obviously, with the Rockies all week long. That's Michael Toglia. We didn't talk about him as a member call up, but he was called up by the Rockies. Obviously, they have a certain stigma in the fantasy industry of not exactly playing right by their young players, their young prospects. But Toglia has played. He has started all the games that he's been on the roster for, playing first base for the Colorado Rockies. They have 6 games at home next week. Toglia with plenty of power upside, putting up plenty of power in the minors. Sure, he's had some power-friendly places as well in AAA, but he's just moving into another power-friendly environment in Colorado. They're not playing every game in Colorado, obviously, but this week, that's all we worried about. The other half of that is they're hosting the Milwaukee Brewers, who I think are going to come up quite a bit in this podcast. And as weird as it is, I feel like we've talked about him quite a bit, but Kesson Hira, still available in plenty of spots, is playing on a regular basis, not just in that platoon role. And I know everybody was going after him last week or recently when the Brewers are going to be facing a bunch of lefties. Even though Hira's lefty splits are terrible, the Brewers still play him against lefties on a regular basis. That doesn't seem to be an issue right now, especially with the Rowdy Tellez getting hurt. Obviously, he was back at DH, but he has still been playing first base for the Brewers and in Colorado. And Hira's just been smacking the ball like crazy. And in Colorado, if you're on a roll, that's usually a recipe to keep it going. Do you see either one of these guys being decent targets for those who Toglia is available everywhere, because I'm pretty sure nobody drafted him at this point. And Hira has been chipping away at his roster sit percentages over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Is just the fact that these guys are playing in Colorado for most of the week, if not the whole week, enough at this point, especially at first base?
Yeah, definitely. Toglia, we've talked about it quite a bit, about my opinion with Colorado players in general. Only play them at home, not on the road, even the superstars. So the schedule works out in our favor here. You can use him for 2 of the next 3 weeks, and then for the last week and a half, you drop him. I will not use him on the road. It helps. That's a 5-game week next week that Colorado plays. Makes it even easier. You're not even going to consider using him on the road for a 5-game week. Yeah, he's great. And then here, yeah, you brought up the reverse splits, and Milwaukee has a lot of games coming up against a lot of right-handed starters. So he is definitely on my list for Sunday night as well.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, as we're going to talk about later. Their schedule for next week gets their doubleheader against San Francisco on Thursday, plus the 3 games in Colorado. So be targeting a lot of Milwaukee hitters throughout the course of the week in your daily leagues and in for FAB this coming week, those that are still available out there. So besides the guys that are playing in Colorado this week, who might you be looking at to add some pop?
Okay, my first guy is 100% rostered in 15 and 12 team leagues in FBC format. But Randall Grichuk talking about Colorado, and splits is available in over half of Yahoo leagues. At home this season, he has hit .327 and has 9 home runs, 44 RBI, 33 runs scored, 235 plate appearances. The RBI there, that's 120 RBI plate pace over a full season. Versus left-handed pitching, he's just as good as he is at home. He's .319 on the season, and this is including the away games versus left-handed pitching, hitting .319 with 7 home runs, 30 RBI in just 151 plate appearances. Again, 120 RBI pace. So he really drives in runs both at home and when facing left-handed pitching. They are at home for 6 games this week, and half of those games are scheduled against left-handed starters. Also, going back 8 days now, today is the 3rd consecutive game versus a left-handed starter that he's been in the leadoff spot. So Grichuk is even getting more plate appearances when facing lefties now as well. To me, this is a no-brainer add in those shallow leagues where he's available for this coming week. Maybe even hold on to him in 2 weeks for that 5-game road week so you can use him again the following week. He's definitely usable 2 of the next 3 weeks, and then he's a drop for the last week and a half of the season, in my opinion. A guy that's more widely available, Adam, did you know that we had a guy this week hit a home run for his first major league hit and kept his helmet on?
Oh, no way. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. Spencer Steer. And he has shown quite a bit of power over the past couple of seasons in the minor leagues. I typically don't listen to other Fab shows until after we record, but I was out running some errands today, so I was listening to our buddies Lou Landers and Lucas Beery, and Lucas Beery loves Spencer Steer, so that's just a confirmation bias for me. It makes me think that this is the right move here. He had 24 home runs and 82 RBI across 2 levels in 2021. In 2022, he has, at this point, including his 1 major league game he's played so far, 24 home runs and 82 RBI. And it took him 8 more plate appearances to get there. The kicker here is we were talking about schedules, and you're talking about an 8-game week for Milwaukee. Next week, Cincinnati has 2 doubleheaders and not a day off. So they play 9 games next week. All Cincinnati Reds with a pulse will be picked up in leagues next weekend. So I'm trying to grab a couple of them a week ahead. 4 of those games are at home against Pittsburgh pitching as well.
Yeah, looking ahead in this scenario, still very valid. We're not talking about 2-star pitchers anymore, but this is still a valid point. As going back to Grichuk, I just want to reiterate, we are either at the start or just before head-to-head playoffs. And looking at these weekly matchups in those scenarios is so incredibly useful and important. You do not need to be holding on to anybody who only has 5 games in a week, even in a daily moves league. If you have a guy that's going Monday and Wednesday, going, they're off on Monday and Thursday, and you have to win that week, they're almost useless unless they're a superstar. You know what I mean? Unless they're on a streak, like they're just undroppable. But most of those players, especially later on in those playoff scenarios, Grichuk is, with this kind of schedule that you're talking about, with the way what he's been doing and what you expect him to do, definitely a good shout out, even though, like you said, he's rostered in most, if not all, of those 15 and 12 teamers, at least on the NFBC format. All right, let's talk a little bit about speed. And I do want to get a little bit into a little bit more detail on. So I'll give out a couple players to target here. But what I want also I want people to consider is not specifically also looking for specific players that might steal a base, but look at the pitchers that are pitching that are going to allow players to have the opportunity to steal a base. So looking at Mike Clevinger, Nick Pivetta, Glenn Otto, Carlos Rodon, Mike Minor, Sandy Alcantara, and our favorite Noah Syndergaard. All of these guys, and I'll list them off again in a second, they have at least 80 innings pitched on the season. They have a stolen base attempt percentage. That is the amount of times base runners who have had an opportunity to steal have actually taken that opportunity and run with it, literally over 8% of the time, which is well above average. And then they also have a stolen base percentage of over 80%. So over 80% of their runners have made it safely to the next base. The top three of those who have the highest, what I call SBO per PA, that's stolen base opportunities, that is, again, defined by a base runner who is at first or second, and they have the next base in front of them open, and at least one pitch has been thrown. So obviously, if the pitcher throws the first pitch and they hit the ball in play, he could never have taken a stolen base. So you have to take that into account. They are Glenn Otto, Mike Minor, and Mike Clevenger of those three. So they've given the most opportunities per plate appearance to their base runners. Clevenger is going to be facing the Dodgers on Saturday, at least tentatively. Glenn Otto is at Houston on Tuesday. Nick Pivetta is at Tampa Bay on Wednesday. Mike Minor is at the Cubs on Wednesday. And the two I'll focus on here are Noah Syndergaard and Sandy Alcantara. They face each other on Thursday in Philadelphia. I'm looking at Bryson Stott, who's still 83% rostered in 12 teamers on the NFBC and in the online championship. So still available in almost 20% of those leagues. Brandon Marsh is a little bit of a sleeper here. Has stolen a base somewhat recently in the last 2 weeks. Does have 9 on the season. So he can run. And if he's given the opportunity against Sandy Alcantara, he very well could. He's playing every day, especially with Castellanos not playing regularly right now. 31% rostered in the online championship in those 12 teamers, still available in some 15 teamers as well. And then you have Joey Wendell, 47% rostered in the online championship against Noah Syndergaard on Thursday. Joey Wendell's a threat to run as long as he's getting the playing time in Miami, regardless of who the pitcher is. But you put him up against Thor and it could get dirty. And obviously John Birdie's there, but he just got hurt. He's also rostered everywhere based on what he did 2 months ago. And so keep an eye on all of those rosters. Anybody who might be available, honestly, on the Dodgers, on the Houston, on the Astros, Tampa Bay, Chicago Cubs, Miami, and Philadelphia, because they at least have one really good matchup throughout the course of the week. And if you're playing in dailies, moves leagues, these guys are all pitching on almost every day of the week. So you've got some options to stream if that's in your bag. So with all that in mind, Kevin, is there anybody else out there that, again, it's not only about your stolen bases? I will say Brandon Marsh batting ninth. That was another key aspect. He will have an opportunity to score runs in the nine hole. He might not get as many at bats as somebody toward the top of the lineup, but still it puts himself in a position where he could score some runs. Anybody else going to scoring some runs for us this coming week?
Yeah, I'm going back to the Cincinnati Reds here. They have 6 games this week, 9 the following week. And TJ Friedl, since he came back to the team on August 17th, has hit .386 and only one stolen base in the time. But 3 home runs. He's not really a power guy. This could be a fluke or this could be an added bonus here. 10 RBI and 8 runs scored. He sits versus lefties, but with this upcoming schedule that the Reds have, it appears they will face 5 out of 6 right-handed starters this week and at least 7 of the 9 the following week. And that's just looking at, I'm not trying to pencil in 2 weeks from now who's starting what day, but there's only 2 left-handed starters on the teams they play for that 9-game week.
Sure.
It's looking good for the playing time. He was stealing more bases in his first stint with the club earlier in the season. He is 6-4-6 on the season with 1. It's only been 50 plate appearances since he came back up. I foresee him getting more opportunities and being turned loose. Cincinnati's not in the race. This is the time of the year, typically in September, we see bad teams attempting more stolen bases. I guess I should probably put some numbers to that and make sure that it's actually true instead of just saying it, because it seems like that's the case when I watch the games.
That's not why people come here.
I'm pretty confident that is the case. So at least I have confidence that I think they will turn him loose over the last month of the season. And the fact that he's getting on base is great. Part of the reason he hasn't attempted a lot of stolen bases, I believe, is he's hitting in the seven hole with a couple of really bad hitters behind him. So if there's two outs when he's on base, they're not going to risk him being unsuccessful and having that guy lead off the next inning. So that's probably part of it. So a move up in the lineup would help, which if he continues to do what he's doing right now is possible over the last month of the season.
Yeah, he's also not doing himself any favors in the fact that he's only walked twice since his call up as well. So if he's going to get on base, he's got to keep hitting, which to your point, he has. He's collected at least one hit in all but three of his appearances since being called back up. I love the fact that Frito's probably not going to get sent back down because the last time we recommended Frito, I think I recommended him, was during that last stint with the club. And he was literally sent back down after I put him on just about every team that I could. So I might be taking a look at him where I need him, knowing that he'll still be on the roster by the time he enters by the time he gets onto my rosters. All right, let's talk about the schedule coming up. These are obviously extremely important, especially in September, to get as much playing time as humanly possible. There are a few teams that have a 7-day work week that includes the Yankees, Chicago White Sox, Minnesota, Washington, Milwaukee, San Francisco, and St. Louis all play all 7 days, with Milwaukee and San Francisco playing a doubleheader on Thursday, giving them 8 games. Colorado is home all week. They have 3 with Milwaukee and then off on Thursday, 3 with Arizona over the weekend before going on the road the following week. Looking ahead, Toronto and Baltimore, they have a doubleheader this coming Monday. They also Toronto also has another doubleheader with Tampa Bay next week. So plenty of at-bats over the next 2 weeks for Toronto hitters, with Cincinnati, as Kevin mentioned, getting 2 doubleheaders, not this coming week, but the following week, that gives them 9 games on that week. So look ahead for that. Atlanta this week is the only team that has a 5-day work week, being off on Monday and Thursday. With that being said, I'm going back to the well on this recommendation, just to keep an eye out. Jace Peterson, he started at third base in 5 of the last 6 games for the Brewers since coming back from the IL, kind of bumping Luis Urias down to a bench role. Again, with the 3 games in Colorado, the doubleheader on Thursday, even if he misses one of those days, he's going to get plenty of plate appearances, plenty of at-bats. And when he gets volume, Jace Peterson has shown that he can contribute in all aspects of the game, including a little bit of speed in there as well. So just the volume that you're going to see out of that, Jace Peterson, at least make sure he's in your waterfall bids and your conditionals as somebody who could get you some volume at multiple positions. That's the key spot about Jace Peterson. He's available at multiple positions and he's playing what seems to be every day for the Brewers, at least as of now. We'll see how that works out throughout the course of the week. Just keep it going. Keep going with the Brewers. Just go down the Brewers lineup, Kevin. Who else you got?
Absolutely. And a Brewers lefty with all the right-handed starters they have coming up, like I mentioned. Garrett Mitchell hitting in the 9-hole. Hitting in the 9-hole isn't too bad for a team that then has Christian Yelich, Willie Adames, Rowdy Tellez, Hunter Renfroe coming up behind you. He hasn't hit the ground running at the MLB level. That's for sure. He's striking out over 40% of the time. It's only 7 games. That's where I'm going here. This would be really hard to put him in your starting lineup right away this week. However, that trip to Colorado, it's not just power in Colorado. And in fact, it's more about the massive outfield than the home runs for the run scoring environment we have there. This, I think, is really what he needs to get going. He has had fairly high strikeout rates in the minors in the past, but nothing close to this over 40% he's got through just 7 games. So if he's putting the ball in play in Colorado, he's going to get on base. If he gets on base, he's going to steal bases. 34 stolen bases in just 64 games across AA and AAA so far this year. We know those minor league stolen base numbers are inflated, but that's still an amazing number. So yeah, Garrett Mitchell sticking with the Brewers, like you said, especially with all the right-handed starters they have on the schedule over the next couple of weeks.
All right, let's get into our pitchers. And to start with pitchers, Kevin, we got to round it back to the White Sox. You officially did jinx it Dylan Cease did not get his no-hitter. He went 8 2/3 of no-hit ball. Luis Arias, of course, of all players, pokes a single and then faces, and then he gets a strikeout. He did end with 7 strikeouts. So I'm appreciative of that. He got the win, got the complete game, all those extra points. But I do blame you for breaking up the no-hitter, even though this won't go out for hours and hours after the game has already ended.
Being a fan of a division rival, I apologize to no one except Mike Carter. I do apologize to Mike Carter, friend of the show. Sure. Love Mike. And everybody that follows him on Twitter knows how much he's agonizing over the White Sox performance. However, all of a sudden, as bad as they have been, they're 2.5 games back. So they have a legitimate shot to make the postseason. And then with some of the starting pitching they have, as bad as they have been for as much of this season that they have looked horrible, that's the kind of team you don't want to face if they do make the postseason with some of the starting pitching they have.
Yeah, now Dylan Cease has really cemented himself as probably the front runner at this point for Cy Young with this performance. We are not that kind of podcast. I get that. It's not our normal conversation. But we do tend to go off onto tangents when it's just you and me, Kevin. So I just want to throw that out there with Verlander and Flanahan being on the shelf for who knows how long, maybe the rest of the regular season. We'll see. He has an opportunity to step it up there and get himself into that conversation. He's already in the conversation, but to get himself above that conversation and a one-hitter, two-walk performance, 7 strikeouts is not gonna do him any harm in that regard.
Definitely.
All right, let's talk about some of the guys that might be available. I'm going to start off because he's probably not available in most places, so I'll let you get to somebody that's a little bit more readily available. I just want to shout out to, even though he had not that great of a start this past week, Jose Quintana's looked really good with St. Louis. He has 2 really good matchups. He does have a 2 start this week. As long as things all stay the course, he is 93% rostered in the online championship, so 100% in the main event, but 33% rostered in Yahoo. So in these leagues that are mostly daily moves leagues, readily available, I would grab him today by the time you're listening to this Sunday. So yeah, sure. Grab him on Sunday, even if you don't need him for Sunday, if you're in a same day move, just to make sure you get him into your roster for that Monday start and take advantage of those. We talked about this so much, right? With Todd and even last week with Chris, the 2 starts are only as good as the matchups in which they are putting forth. And St. Louis has not as good of a schedule as the Mets, but at least this coming week, it's looking really nice with the matchups that he's got. So Jose Quintana, if available, he is available in 7% of online championships. So those 12 teamers out there, he should be picked up readily. And I will tell you, if he's available in the on the wire leagues, he will not be where I have any say in the matter this coming week. So I already might roster him in at least a place or two, because I know we've talked about him more than a few times, especially after the trade to St. Louis. But Kevin, give me somebody that might be a little bit more readily available in most scenarios.
Yeah, I'm picking on Washington Nationals here as well. I wish he also had a start against Pittsburgh. That would be great, but he doesn't. He has the one big start. Now, this is really intriguing to me, and there's quite a bit here. Talking about Bailey Falter, and this is the whole Zach Wheeler thing. Is he going to pitch later in the week? I really don't think so. It makes it hard to roll with Falter when there is that slight possibility, but I really don't think Wheeler's going to have a start this week. If he doesn't, it's going to be Bailey Falter. He's 92% rostered in 15 team main events, but only 6% rostered in 12 team online championships. Huge gap just going from 15 to 12 team leagues. Less than 10% on Yahoo as well, a little higher rostered at 9%. But Falter has been pretty good. In general, he's been pretty good all season. And even more so, he's been good, especially against bad teams in recent weeks. At Arizona, 6 1/3, 1 earned run. He did give up 3 runs versus Pittsburgh, but still got the win. He only gave up a run against the Mets. another start at Pittsburgh, two earned runs, all of these at least six innings, his four most recent starts. And he's got 23 strikeouts over that time period, just under a strikeout an inning for the season and recently. And I really think he's going to get this start versus Washington later in the week that I don't believe Wheeler will get. That it's, like I said, it's tough rolling him out there, not knowing for sure. He's probably not going to be listed as a starter for the week anywhere when we set our lineups on Monday. So this takes a little bit of faith, but we talked about there's nobody out there available, especially in 15 team leagues. If you're in one of the handful of 15 team leagues where he's available, a guy like this, I'm definitely rolling the dice on.
Yeah, I don't always love to put your faith into high fly ball pitchers, but when you have the Philadelphia defense behind you, a fly ball pitcher might be better than a ground ball pitcher in most scenarios. His 48.6% fly ball rate is not that bad, even though it's increased over the last couple of years, even through the minors, when your ground ball rate is under 35%. I know there's a highlight out there right now with, I think it's Stott and Segura turning a double play, and that looked really nice, but in general, there's a reason why Zach Wheeler probably should have better a stat line than he does in general. But let's talk about some guys that are going to chip away at our ratios. The guy I'm going to be looking at, it might be on my list of 45 pitchers, and we've already talked about a few of them. But another one to add on there is Taylor Rogers. Again, sticking with Milwaukee, even though he'll be pitching in Colorado for 3 days. Still, the eight games, the doubleheader on Thursday, gives him plenty of opportunity to get into the game. He might even vulture a save throughout the course of the week from Devin Williams. His last seven outings, he's only faced four more batters than the minimum through 7 2/3 innings. In 11 total appearances for the Brewers, he's only given up earned runs in two of those appearances, and he's only walked a total of two batters as well. Again, he should be in line for more innings with the extra games on the schedule, and he's been pitching really well. He's been pitching just as well as he was in San Diego, if not better. Maybe it's the lack of pressure. Maybe it's just a new environment. It doesn't really matter. He has an opportunity to help you out in a category. He's definitely not going to hurt you. In best case scenario, he walks himself into a win, or he vultures a save from Williams when he's pitched too many games in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got another guy that I'm adding to those lists and probably fairly high on the list due to the schedule upcoming. That's Brad Hand in Philadelphia. 23% rostered in 15 team NFBC leagues, 13% and 14% in Yahoo and 12 team NFBC leagues. So widely available, pitching very well of late, and their upcoming schedule is Miami, Washington, and then Miami again. So another guy that could vulture a win, vulture a save, either or, maybe one of each, and has been performing well of late. And I think it gets overlooked because of the mess in general that the Philadelphia bullpen has been, but he's pitched well all season long. He's got a 2.04 ERA for the season. So yeah, Brad Hand's definitely going to be on those 45 pitcher lists that we're putting together for Sunday night.
Oh, I can't wait to see the results of those. Let's talk about more guys that are going to probably be on that list, but they might have more of a chance at our favorite category, and that is saves. I got into our sheet early to make sure I could get the low-hanging fruit here, and that is Jimmy Herger of the Angels, who seems to be the clear favorite for saves in Anaheim now, getting their last three opportunities within the last, I think, within 5 days of each other. They've got three versus Detroit and then three at Houston. If they're winning any games in Houston, they're probably going to be by a small margin, giving him more opportunities for saves. But then throughout the course, over the next week and a half, they've got series against Cleveland, Seattle, and Texas. So no team that really stands out as a powerhouse that's going to take the sweep the Angels, as bad as the Angels have been lately, they still have two prominent players in their lineup that can, and Mike Trout, and of course I'm talking about Ringifo in there as a top two. So they can definitely take some wins there. He's gonna be bid on everywhere, so just make sure that if you need saves, he's top of the line as far as somebody who is found himself in a role that is getting him regular work. And then just as a shout out, Josh Hader, 79% roster in the main event. And that's all after last week, if I'm not mistaken, as Kevin reminded me before recording. So over 20% leagues in the main event, those 15 teamers, Josh Hader probably will be bid back up by teams who are desperate for saves. And he did get a save for last week after Nick Martinez pitched 2 days in a row in three of the previous four. That's not to say that, honestly, with all the write-ups I keep seeing about Nick Martinez, and I know we talked about him last week and the week prior, he actually hasn't looked that great. The day he got a save after pitching, I think, one and a third, like, all of his inherited runners scored in when he came in the eighth inning. He's also let up runs in his last save as well. So just keep in mind, if the Padres think Josh Hader has been fixed, Josh Hader will be the closer in San Diego. Simple as that. I'm not saying you go out and drop Nick Martinez this week, but just don't be surprised if all of a sudden Hader's move right back into that role. Do you have any disagreement there, Kevin?
Not at all. That sounds exactly right. Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm going to be careful with Hader. He's been on my bench for a while in the leagues that I have him. I don't think I'm starting him again yet this week, unless I'm desperate for saves. And in that case, I'd probably see what happens. Throw him in there and see what happens. We're at that point. One of my favorite scenes in the movie Major League is when Jake Taylor, the catcher, all right, Ricky, let's get nasty. We're at that point, the fantasy baseball season. We got to do things that may not be the smartest move, but if you have a hunch and you're desperate, the risk could be
your
worth
desperation shows. Yep, sure.
Exactly. So yeah, that's where I'm at there. I agree with most everything you said. Another guy, same list, could have talked about this guy in the ratios category, but he does have 8 saves on the season. Has gotten half of them since August 1st. Got another one today versus the Yankees. That's Jason Adam in Tampa Bay. We know what Tampa Bay does, but he's definitely on the list. And a 1.16 ERA and 0.64 whip on the season. He's been amazing, and he gets his share of the save opportunities. And he's 98% rostered in 15 teams, but only 33% in 12s. And then right at 50% in Yahoo, it bounces back up, probably due to a couple of his nice performances this week in the leagues where he was added over the last few days. But yeah, Jason Adam has been phenomenal. He's not going to get every save opportunity, but he'll get some of them.
Yeah, but who will in Tampa Bay? Who will get every single? Pete VanBakes is back and he's been lights out, and they have, I think, Jason Martinez over at Rust Resource has like 4 or 5 guys in the committee there. If you're going to go after one of those guys, at least make it a guy like Adam, who's going to be lights out in every other scenario, even if it's not a closing situation. All right. Final category, wildcard category. I'm going back to this one. And just a reminder, Wander Franco is still available in a couple of leagues where he hasn't been picked back up after doing this rehab. Might've been dropped again when he had to take some time off. His rehab restarts on Sunday. It's been announced he's going to go back to Durham. And who's to say when he'll come back? But if you do want some little ratio stabilization in your lineup, Franco's going to do that. He may not add a whole bunch of power down the stretch, especially with that wrist injury coming back, and they're not going to want to push him. But when he is in the lineup, he's definitely going to help you. At the very least, he'll probably get put right back into toward the top of that lineup. He'll score some runs. He might even knock in some runs, but he'll definitely hit the ball plenty and help you chip away at least batting average or OBP if that's your scenario. So again, these are still your stashes. These are still your players that may not help you right away, even with a short period of time left in the season. Franco's still a name that's gonna make a difference for you, I think. So if you want him, if he's available, you probably need to grab him this week, because anybody will be using the remainder of their fab next week if it makes an announcement that he's actually going to return to the team after a more positive rehab start over the next couple of days than he did the first time around. Kevin, who's a wild card you might be looking at this point?
The reason I use this guy for a wild card and not in the power category is because, it's the let's get nasty. It's tough to trust this, but if you need power, Nick Prado in Kansas City, in spite of continuing to strike out over a third of his plate appearances, the home runs are now coming that we expected. And we knew this. He's been a high strikeout guy, even in the minor leagues. He's got his walk rate up to nearly 10%. And that's what's helped balance that out in the minors, is he always walked 15% or more of the time. He's up to about 10% now. So he is drawing the walks and the home runs are coming. So he's a three true outcome guy for sure. It's tough to throw him in there with a sub 200 batting average, especially if you're in a tight spot in that category as well. But the home runs are here now. He's had another one today. I believe it was his third one this week. I was in this position in a couple of leagues coming into this week or the weekend. I was in tight spots and I needed a guy. And fortunately, it's come through. And over the past couple of weeks, the batting average has been there. 4 for 16, so 250 2 weeks ago. And coming into today, he was 5 of 17 for this week and had another good day today. So fortunately, the batting average has been there for the past couple of weeks. But there is that danger that he could give you a pretty big batting average hit in any given week if that's something you can't risk. But the power's there now.
Yeah, at this point, if that's what you're looking for, you got to be focusing on one or two categories, really, when it comes down to it, and cross your fingers that it doesn't hurt you elsewhere. Yeah, definitely something to keep a lookout if that's what you're looking for. All right, Kevin, that's going to do it for our recommendations. You got any final words of wisdom to impart on everybody as we tune out?
No, I think we've covered a lot. We've talked about a lot of little different tidbits throughout this show. I think more so than all the little things add up to a big thing, and keep everything in mind and try to get it all squared away in your head when you're making decisions for this week, is you brought it up and I have it going on in some leagues as well. Playoffs are starting in head-to-head leagues. So good luck to everybody.
Yeah. Whether you are chipping away your roto leagues or fighting for the playoff spot or trying to advance, good luck. All right. That's going to wrap it up for episode 75 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you are listening. We'll be back every Sunday with detailed FAB breakdowns throughout the rest of the 2022 season. Of course, make sure you keep an eye out for Kevin's companion article over at pitcherlist.com. That comes out every Sunday afternoon. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. Of course, follow the pod at OnTheWirePod. I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. With that, we bid you goodbye.